You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
He saw his teacher get shot and killed. He saw another classmate get shot and killed by the gunman as the police approached the classroom.
I was telling my friend to not talk because he's going to hear us. The cop said, help if you need help. And then one of the persons in my class said, help. The guy overheard and he came in and shot her. And then the cops barged in into that classroom, and the guy shot the cops, and the cops just started shooting.
May 27th, 2022, we are live streaming at Larry Connors USA at rumble.com. Go to rumble.com, enter the search Larry Connors USA, one word, and you'll be in studio with us. Those are the remarks of a 9-year-old describing what he witnessed as he survived the shooting at Uvalde, Texas, at the Robb Elementary School. The introduction came from MSNBC Lawrence O'Donnell, who was playing a clip that had actually been made and recorded by a reporter in Uvalde, talking a family into letting their son be interviewed, but not showing his face. Now, 19 children were killed, 2 teachers. The inquiry continues on several levels. Main focus on police response, the timeline. And, of course, for gun control advocates, all of this is a chance to politic. The funerals have yet to start for those killed in that slaughter in that school earlier this week. But, yes, I agree that we need questions answered and be more direct about it. I'd said the other day that based on the information we're getting here, hundreds of miles away from the border where it took place, we don't know if police acted properly, fast enough, and if the timeline is distorted, who did what. It's understanding that in the beginning, a story is always confusing, a story of this magnitude. There's so many pieces of information coming at you. It's a fire hydrant hose turned open, flooding you with information. Some of it might be real, some of it might be absolutely fake, and some of it might be a mixture. And some of it just might be confusion. Folks telling you what they believe is to be true. They truly believe it, but it's wrong. But one of the first and most pressing issues for me is, as I'd raised the other day, that after the Columbine shooting in Colorado in 1999, the attitude and approach was police, we've got to rethink school shootings. We cannot stand outside while the gunmen are still inside. We've got to break in and go for it right away. I thought that had become standard procedure. In fact, I've been told it was, and it has been in other cases. But in this case, for some reason, Uvalde, Texas, appears it was not. In fact, word is coming out that some 20 officers were in a hallway outside the classrooms for more than 45 minutes before agents used a master key to open a door and confront the gunman. Again, I don't know how factual that is, but we're also getting reports that Border Patrol agents had arrived and they were ready. They came in from something like 70 miles away, so that was a lack of time. And that they were prevented from making an immediate breach of the classroom by Uvalde police. I'm telling you right now, there's still a lot of confusion, but we do need answers. I just don't want to turn it into politics like the Democrats have rushed to do. We're going to get into that in more detail coming up. Of course, the Sussman trial concluding, or rather closing arguments today showing how much the Clintons were tied, or Hillary Clinton tied, to trying to create a Russian collusion hoax against Trump. And, of course, next Monday is Memorial Day. We will be here. And I have a special story to wrap up today to share that one listener sent me, something she does in advance of every Memorial Day with her grandson to teach him the values that too many kids and far too many adults don't know or don't care. We have a lot to cover over the next 2 hours. Let your family and friends know we're on the air right now. Lock and load. Ready. On the right. I personally know at least three people who got sick from mold. It's not uncommon for homes, businesses to have a leak somewhere, and it doesn't take long for mold to start growing. Well, of course, I recommend Wellington Environmental. You don't want a company that's just going to clean up the water. Wellington has 34 years of experience. In fact, hospitals often have Wellington inspect and treat mold. Do what they do. Call 314-644-4930. 644-4930. Call Wellington for a mold inspection, air testing, professional remediation. 314-644-4930. 644-4930. AAA rated with the Better Business Bureau. Wellington Environmental. Your world cleaner, better, safer. Be well with Wellington. I want you to know something special. John Beal Roofing constantly gives back to the community in so many ways, supporting more charities and good causes than any other local roofing company. Why? It's the right thing to do. Keep that in mind when you need a new roof, plus quality work at the lowest price, guaranteed. John Beal, 1-800-NEW-ROOF, 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
And now to the latest on the Durham probe. Hillary Clinton's former campaign attorney, Michael Sussman, did not take the stand in his defense today, the day before we heard the closing arguments in the case. Jurors have got to decide whether or not Sussman lied to the FBI when he claimed he wasn't bringing phony information about Donald Trump to the FBI on behalf of Hillary Clinton. There is a smoking gun in this case, and it's a text that was written just before Sussman met with the FBI general attorney, Jim Baker, general counsel. He wrote a text to the FBI guy, Jim Baker. He says, "Jim, it's Michael Sussman. I have something time-sensitive and sensitive that I need to discuss. Do you have availability for a short meeting tomorrow? I'm coming on my own, not on behalf of a client or company. Want to help the Bureau?"
Those are the words of a Fox report on the Sussman case, which today is in closing arguments. Michael Sussman, of course, accused of lying to a federal grand jury about why he went to the FBI, and that in saying that he did not represent any client. He just wanted to talk to an FBI agent he had had connections with before to kind of help the Bureau. Now, the problem that exists is that in addition to what he said and is quoted by the FBI agent under the trial proceedings, while on the witness stand, the FBI agent said Sussman claimed again that he was not working for anyone, when in fact he was working for the Clinton, Hillary Clinton campaign team, and was there to deliver information that they had bought and paid for to create a connection between Donald Trump and a Russian bank. Now, that would appear to be a smoking gun, wouldn't it? It would appear that that itself would be enough to convict Sussman and really open up more about Hillary Clinton and the Democrat National Committee, which was also involved in paying for that fake Steele dossier. All of that information inside that dossier that was presented to the FBI was used for the basis to get FISA warrants to get more information, supposedly proving that Donald Trump, as a businessman, as a politician, as a candidate for president, was colluding with Russia. And Russia was going to help get him elected. That was the whole idea, right? Well, again, the smoking gun being the statement that he made to the FBI agent, but the real proof was a piece of evidence in an email that he sent, similar statement in an email to his FBI agent friend. There was hard evidence. Now, there's a smoking gun. But before you rush in on that aspect, Andy McCarthy, a Fox legal analyst, talked about the aspect that you have to keep in mind the timing of the case filed against Michael Sussman, and then, of course, the knowledge of the evidence and the statute of limitations regarding that email in particular. Here is the words of Andy McCarthy.
They got it too late. When this case was indicted in September of 2021, they were right up against the five-year statute of limitations. The meeting that Baker had with Sussman, Jim Baker was the general counsel of the FBI at the time, that occurred on September 19th, 2016. So they had to indict this case by September of 2021. They didn't locate this text until about 6 months after that. So by that point, Durham could not go back to the grand jury and wow. supersede the indictment and add new charges because it was time barred.
In other words, the statute of limitations. That applies specifically to the email text. The conversation he had with the agent happened a day or two after the text, so that fell within the statute of limitations. The judge was allowing the text to be used not as prime evidence, but supporting evidence. Well, today, as I said, the closing arguments are underway. And the defense attorney for Michael Sussman, in their closing argument, say this case against our client is weak, one of misdirection, smoke and mirrors. Hey, you've seen enough Perry Masons to know what that means, and you've seen enough law and crime shows and the attorneys when they're up there making these statements, especially if it's the defense. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just saying you've seen enough that when they start talking about it's a misdirection, it's all smoke and mirrors, I don't hear them refuting directly. But the Sussman defense attorney did open his closing by referring to a famous allusion by David Copperfield. Remember when he made the Statue of Liberty disappear by moving the audience's attention somewhere else? See, that's where he's saying that's all they're doing here. The special counsel's office bought a snowmaking machine and blew that over the lawn, and they want you to think it snowed. That's your defense? I mean, really? And yet it might work because there's some conflicts on that jury. The judge has actually worked with Sussman in years past. To me, that should be a reason to recuse from that case. And then a member of the jury openly admitting that they had a child that played on a sports team with one of Sussman's kids. Again, I'd say, strike that person. Again, Sussman charged with one count of making a false statement to the FBI when he met with the special counsel on September 19, 2016. and he's pled not guilty. His defense is claiming that his exact quote here is that Sussman is, quote, a serious national security lawyer who received what he believed to be credible data from a world-leading expert. He knew it was a lie. I'm convinced he knew it was a lie. Will the jury accept that allowance? Congressman Byron Donalds, Republican of Florida, said there is something the Sussman trial shows us.
But what I've learned is what I pretty much already knew, but now it's coming out in the court of law, is that the DNC has been corrupt. Hillary Clinton, we know she's corrupt. But also it's at the upper echelons of the FBI. When you have FBI agents trying to request to get more background information on Alpha Bank, and that was being denied by people in the upper echelons of the FBI, it's a serious problem with respect to the credibility of the FBI, not just during that time period, but going forward. Because what else is the upper echelons of the FBI denying additional information on? It's a serious problem. Members of Congress have a responsibility to restore that agency to its former greatness.
And I would love to see that happen, because the FBI has been decimated under this administration. And, of course, it was under attack by those in charge, even while Trump was president. They were utilizing the FBI, weaponizing it for political purposes. That at least we're learning. We're getting more evidence of that. Whether or not Sussman is actually convicted of perjury. But the government, in this closing argument, did not talk about smoke and mirrors and deflection. Went to right to facts, billing records, emails to the jury, beginning on July 29, 2016, through October 2016, revealing Sussman repeatedly was billing the Clinton campaign for work on the Alpha Bank opposition research to be used against Trump. In other words, he was clearly involved while he told the FBI agent that he was meeting, and in the text itself saying, I'm not doing this on behalf of a client. I'm just coming to help the agency. Like, I'm just a good citizen. I have no dog in this fight. Oh, you had a dog, all right. Hillary, that was your dog. One of the bills was, quote, to, and I'm quoting, Hillary for America. That's a bill that Sussman and his agency, his law agency, sent to the Hillary campaign, Hillary for America. They sent it September 19, 2016, and that's the day the meeting that Sussman had with his FBI friend at the FBI headquarters. It was dated September 19. The time listed is 3.3 hours. The memo states, quote, work and communications regarding confidential project. He was there on behalf of Hillary Clinton. Whether or not the jury's going to let him off, we are learning things in that case. And again, back to Andy McCarthy, Fox legal analyst, and also who is a former prosecutor himself, a U.S. prosecutor, said we are clearly getting evidence, more and more evidence, of what the FBI knew all along from the very beginning that the Russian collusion story started, even as Trump was assuming office.
What they've presented here is showing that the FBI, no matter what they may say they now accept about his story, at the time they absolutely knew who he was and who he represented, and that they themselves in their own paper trail here concealed his identity. That is to say, FBI headquarters concealed from the agents investigating the case where the information came from. And the implication here is they knew they were taking politically explosive information. They were accepting political opposition research from one campaign to use in an investigation of the other candidate. Mm-hmm. They knew they were enmeshing themselves in politics, and they kind of tried to cover their tracks on it. And it's a bad look for the FBI.
It is a bad look for the FBI, because it puts them squarely in the crosshairs of, are you with our government? or against our government. I've worked with FBI agents, special agents in charge of various areas, individual agents in the field, over many years. And the ones I have always encountered have the highest standards. They would not want to be involved in anything like this. And you can bet there are many members of the FBI right now that are just shaking their heads like, why in the hell did we go down that road? The reason you went down that road is because your FBI leader at the time, Comey, and his underlings, McCabe, and the rest of them were all helping you, pushing you in that direction. And back again to Congressman Byron Donalds, Republican of Florida. This could be a two-way street.
This is about Donald Trump, but it's also not about Donald Trump. You're absolutely right, Maria. If they can do that to him, they can do it to anybody. So people need to get their political high horses on this thing, and we have to get back to credible institutions in the United States that do their job, are not politicized, and protect all Americans and serve all Americans.
Protect all Americans, serve all Americans. That's the role of the FBI. Not to be weaponized by one political party against another. In this case, the Democrat Party against the Republicans. Coming up, this trial might have opened a Pandora's box.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
The elephant in the room here is the public sees that, especially in this administration, we have two tiers of justice. So if you commit the same behavior, but it's got one political slant, you get treated one way by the justice system. And if you have other political attitudes or predilections, you're treated the other way. You know, the January 6th defendants are treated one way. The people who demonstrate in front of the Supreme Court justices' homes are treated a different way, even though they're committing virtually the same offense. I'm not talking about the violent people on January 6th. I'm just talking about the people who were there. I think the thing people look at, especially with you want to talk about red flag laws or other kinds of regulation, if people thought this was going to be done with a single standard of justice in good faith, that would be one thing. But what they see is a political party that uses law enforcement as a weapon against its political opposition.
Those are the words again of Andy McCarthy, Fox legal analyst. He did an excellent piece he wrote for The Spectator, I should say The National Review, also previously, and talking about how this trial was going to start developing. This is before the trial actually started. He did refer to the opening statement at that time that Sussman had relied on information that he believed to be true, and the judge at that time would not allow the prosecutor to claim that he knew it wasn't. But Andy McCarthy, in his piece he wrote for National Review, said, we really need to have the judge show more latitude and introduce more evidence about flaws in this case. He said it should be knocked down to show that the demonstration was so flawed that someone of Sussman's experience and training had to know it when he peddled it to the FBI. Had to know it. And to that extent, former House Intel Committee Chairman Devin Nunes, Republican of California, said, here you got this guy coming in acting like he's a good Samaritan. And then James Baker himself, the FBI attorney he talked to, says 100% sure that Sussman told him that I'm here just being a good citizen. And of course, there's that email that backs up that testimony. And Nunes says, yes, there's a concern about that jury pool. given that some of the jurors personally know members of Sussman's family, and many of them are politically inclined toward Hillary Clinton. Of course, if you're going to hold it in that arena of D.C., you're going to get that kind of clientele, and you're going to get that kind of jury pool, aren't you? Nunes went on to say that we learned that Hillary herself paid and knew about the operation. And how do we know that? Well, that's because of what happened just the other day when one of her aides was testifying. That would be Robbie Mook, the ex-campaign manager. And Mook admitted in the trial about this bogus story about Donald Trump and Russia's Alpha Bank. Mook admitted, I discussed it with Hillary. And he said, hey, you know we have this. We want to share it with the reporter. And she agreed. She knew it was a lie. Mook knew it was a lie. But Hillary gave him consent. Go ahead and spread the lie. To that extent, Matt Taibbi, who's a Substack reporter, Rolling Stone reporter, actually, with a new Substack article titled, Shouldn't Hillary Clinton Be Banned from Twitter Now? She was spreading a lie, allowing it to escalate, build, get inflamed, and she knew it was a lie. As I said, even if Sussman is found not guilty by a jury that many have already said they like Hillary, and one even has a child on a sports team with the defendant's child, even if they find him not guilty, we're learning a lot of details that we suspected anyway. Open up that Pandora box of more. A lot more. Coming up, more questions about what happened and what did not happen in Uvalde, Texas. Stand by. Ackerman Toyota believes when you need service, you want genuine parts, certified mechanics, no hidden cost. You get all of that with Ackerman Toyota. Plus, if you're ready for a new car or pre-owned, see what Ackerman has on the lot or what's coming. Ackerman Toyota, Hampton and Interstate 44. Ackerman Toyota for life.
You can text Larry right now at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
Oh, baby, when you talk like that, you make a woman go mad. So be wise and keep on reading the signs of my body. I'm on tonight, you know my hips don't lie. And I'm starting to feel you, boy. Come on, let's go.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Officers with the Consolidated Independent School District, they approached the gunman and engaged with the gunman at that time. The gunman then entered a back door and went down two short hallways and then into a classroom on the left-hand side. The gunroom entered into that classroom, and the classroom was connected internally to another classroom. Border Patrol, Consolidated ISD officers, police, sheriffs, and DPS officers converged on that classroom. And a Border Patrol officer killed the gunman.
Those are the words of Texas Governor Abbott describing the information he was handed. I will tell you that. You got to keep that in mind. He's reading what he was given by someone who supposedly had collected all the information and put it in the right order, because the governor didn't do it. He was reading simply what he was handed. There are a lot of questions about that timeline and a lot of questions from the very beginning. Robb Elementary School is about a mile and a half from the Uvalde Police Department. Maybe 3 minutes for a police officer to respond. And apparently none were there until almost 15 minutes after the gunman entered the building. And that's still not very clear. When I tell you that, don't take that as a fact. That could change tomorrow. This is a thing that someone in a full detailed investigation will have to nail down each and every piece of it. But here's what we have at the latest. This is the latest again. And I remind you, in an event like this, as it unfolds, there are a lot of different scenarios, different stories. They may all converge at one point, or they may go in opposite directions, or they may parallel each other, and yet still neither be truly the fact. And I say that with decades as a reporter on such stories, be it a school shooting like this, or a natural disaster, or some type of incident that is confusing from the very beginning. So today, the Texas Department of Public Safety Director, Stephen McGraw, when he was asked today why police didn't engage the shooter immediately, he said, and I'm quoting, "The on-scene commander at the time believed that it had transitioned from an active shooter to a barricaded subject. He said, a decision was made on the scene, I wasn't there, that this was a barricaded subject situation. There was time to retrieve the keys and wait for a tactical team with equipment to go ahead and breach the door and take on the subject. He said, at that point, that was the decision. That was the thought process." Again, this is the Texas Department of Public Safety Director, Stephen McGraw. And he added, and I'm quoting, "From the benefit of hindsight, from where I'm sitting now, that, of course, it was not the right decision. It was a wrong decision. Very. There was no excuse for that. I wasn't there, but I'm just telling you from what we know, we believe we should have been an entry as soon as we can." I would second that, and again, I wasn't there. But there's also another report circulating that they believe that he had barricaded himself in there and there was no one in there left alive anyway. We now know there were survivors. Two little boys hiding under one table, draped with a tablecloth. They were alive. We don't know how many others were still alive but dying of their wounds, that maybe if they'd been reached in time, they could have been saved. And the tactical team that supposedly responded and killed the Uvalde school shooter, no, I'm not going to use his name. I refuse to use his name. He's an 18-year-old who went ballistic for whatever reason, shooting his grandmother first and texting or sending on Instagram or whatever the chat he was using, using social media to say, look at what I'm going to do. I did do it. Now I'm going to school. Two officers briefed on the situation told the New York Times that the specialized Border Patrol agents arrived about 12 p.m. to 12:10. That's roughly 30 minutes earlier than previously thought. And there's also a report that the Uvalde Police Department kept the Border Patrol agents from going inside immediately. You see how confusing this is? I can't tell you that any of that I just read to you is absolute. Homeland Security Advisor Council Co-Chair, former Police Commissioner of Boston, L.A., New York, Bill Bratton, was talking about that issue, the confusion that happens, the miscommunication, and then what should have happened and maybe what did not happen or what could have happened, as he explained, starting out how difficult it is to understand this situation as it's unfolding.
You always start off with the information that's preliminary, subject to change. Information they've been putting out now 2-3 days after the event has been an embarrassment because there was so much misinformation. So we really don't know at this stage what happened in those first 12 minutes, that first hour. And what we do know is that there seems to have been a violation of the basic tenet of active shooters, which is that you move to the shooter. No matter what, you move to the shooter to save lives. And officers around the country, since Columbine now for 30 years, have trained to do that. We're going to need to find out in the days and weeks ahead, did this department train for it? Did they in fact do it? I'm now reading news stories about some individual officers who effectively did do that in that school.
Yes, there are some that did do it, but again, apparently some of the story is that they were waiting for a master key thinking he was just barricaded and there might be no one left alive inside. Now, that's an assumption I would never want to make, that no one inside is alive. I want to believe that there might still be some that are shot and wounded, and might be mortally wounded if we don't get in time. And, of course, the first thing that always happens when something like this occurs, you have Democrats begin to call for more gun control. They won't even wait for the funerals. But since they brought it up, I remind you that Senator Chuck Schumer actually blocked the bill that Senator Ron Johnson, Republican of Wisconsin, introduced the day after the shooting, trying to establish a safe standards practice, best standards for all schools for the safety of their students, Senator Johnson.
Now, there have been a number of pieces of legislation offered by Republicans on the Judiciary Committee to, you know, close some gaps in some of our gun laws, but the Democrats have always rejected those. It's always their way or the highway. What happened on the floor of the Senate yesterday is just a classic example. I was working with the parents of two of the Parkland victims on crafting a piece of legislation that was actually good enough that the previous administration set up the clearinghouse. This is called the Luke and Alex School Safety Act. It establishes a clearinghouse school safety best practices. This would have codified it. These parents have been looking to pass this bill, codify it for years. I thought, in consultation with those parents, that perhaps we could get this passed by unanimous consent, but Chuck Schumer politicized it and he went down and objected to it. It's just sad.
It is sad. And in fact, Schumer claimed that this would just create more guns in the school. That's what he's claiming. He sent out a tweet. The truth, there were officers at the school in Texas. The shooter got past them. We know that's not right. Now, Schumer might have been reacting to news he had been given, which was false information. There were no officers in the school, and the so-called security guard that was employed was not at that building, maybe patrolling another part of the campus of that school district in Uvalde, but he wasn't carrying a weapon anyway. What did happen, though, here's something that did happen. An off-duty Border Patrol agent was sitting in a barber's chair when the attack started. He was getting his hair cut. His wife sent him a text. There's an active shooter at our daughter's school. The off-duty Border Patrol agent, Jacob Alvarado, grabbed the barber's shotgun and went to the school directly. Went into the wing of the building where he knew his daughter was in class. He said, "I'm looking for my daughter. I also know that wing, so I start clearing classes in that wing." Two officers with pistols drawn were giving him cover as he cleared that wing. Other officers guiding children out to the sidewalk at that time. He did find his daughter, hugged her, kept helping other kids move to safety. We're going to spend more time on that entire story and the miscommunication and how it's being politicized in the next hour. But also today, just the same week of that shooting, the NRA convention is underway in Houston. Some cancellations you should hear. Stand by. The other day, some listeners saw me in Cafe Napoli, and one said, "We see you here all the time." I said, "Yes, you do. I am the Cafe Napoli ambassador." Truth is, I've been a Napoli customer for decades, when there was only the Clayton location, then Town and Country, now St. Charles. Trust me, you'll enjoy great food, drinks, service. Cafe Napoli, Clayton, Town and Country, streets of St. Charles. And tell them the Cafe Napoli ambassador sent you.
Baby, I got your number.
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
The NRA summit meeting of the leaders of the NRA gathering in Houston today. Texas Governor Abbott was to be addressing them. He canceled. He said, "I'm going to spend the time in Uvalde, Texas, doing what I can there with the victims of that shooting and inquiring and getting more information. He did submit a video to be played to the conference. Donald Trump, at last report, still scheduled to speak, as is Senator Ted Cruz. They may have by this point. I haven't seen an update on it. The shooter in Uvalde was carrying an AR-15-style rifle. That particular rifle he had was made by Daniel Defense. Daniel Defense was one of the manufacturers that was going to be showing its weapons at the NRA convention. Statement from Daniel Defense. Daniel Defense is not attending the NRA meeting due to the horrifying tragedy in Uvalde, Texas, where one of our products was criminally misused. We believe this week is not the appropriate time to be promoting our products in Texas at the NRA meeting. And then you have some big names who are going to be appearing and entertaining at this NRA gathering in Houston. Lee Greenwood, Larry Gatlin, Larry Stewart. Those three have all pulled out of performing because of the shooting in Uvalde, Texas. In a statement, Larry Gatlin said, "To my fellow sad Americans, I cannot in good conscience perform at the NRA convention this weekend. While I agree with most of the positions held by the NRA, I have come to believe that while background checks would not stop every madman with a gun, it is at the very least a step in the right direction toward trying to prevent that kind of tragedy we saw this week in Uvalde in my beloved Weeping, Texas." Gatlin's certainly entitled to his opinion, and I could understand if he just felt, "There's no way in my heart I can perform." But his remark about background checks would be a step in the right direction. There was no background check that was going to stop this 18-year-old. He had no mental history or anything been documented at that point. Whereas in Buffalo, the gunman did have such a history, but it had been omitted or never reported. It fell through the loophole. Lee Stewart, as I said, noted that he was also pulling out. He said, "I made the decision to pull out at the convention this weekend." He said, "I'm a strong believer in the Second Amendment. I know the NRA is a great organization, teaching gun safety with a membership of law-abiding citizens who love our country. I just believe this is best for me at this time." Lee Greenwood, singer of God Bless the USA, not going to be performing, as I said. And his remarks are, "As a father, I join the rest of America in being absolutely heartbroken by this horrific event. I was scheduled to perform at NRA's private event with my band. After thoughtful consideration, we decided to cancel that appearance out of respect for those mourning the loss of those innocent children and teachers in Uvalde." American Pie singer Don McLean had pulled out performing for the same reasons. He said, "I'm sure all Americans, or rather all the folks planning to attend this event, are shocked and sickened by these events as well. After all, we are all Americans. I share the sorrow for this terrible, cruel loss with the rest of the nation. But I'm not going to be performing, thinking it will be disrespectful and hurtful to perform for the NRA at their convention." There was pressure upon many of those companies that were being represented. "You should not be here." And pressure on the Houston mayor to cancel it. And he said, "I cannot cancel it, will not cancel it." Let me correct that. I don't know what he said that he will not. He said, "I cannot cancel it." The NRA is going to be made out to be the bad guy in the end, regardless of what gun story you're telling. These performers have their own right, their own reasons to make the decisions they made. Those who are attending the NRA have the same right and the same reason. timing is something that, yes, sometimes you say it's just not a good time. That decision, if it were going to be made, in my opinion, the NRA should have made it. The NRA should have decided we're not going to hold it at this time. If I were on the NRA board, and I've flown with Wayne LaPierre on a few events, or at least one or two, I would have said the NRA should take the initial step and say, let's cancel that convention for this week. Be done with it like that. However, the political opposition and the attacks on the Second Amendment will not stop. That's coming up next.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.